Welcome to episode 8 of The Putting Couch. This is a podcast brought to you by the Seymour Putter Company and our tour team. And today our tour team is just myself, Jim, and Ted Galina as Cody Hale. He's out on the road. He's heading to the John Deere Classic to meet up with a great friend of ours, Zach Johnson, and fine-tune his backup putter. So today I'm really, really pleased to have on my good friend, Dr. Bob Winters. We've teased this episode. We've talked about the fact that moving forward, Dr. Bob Winters is going to put the couch in the putting couch.
Exactly.
And Doc, it is great to have you on today.
Well, Ted and Jim, it is so great to be on the show. I've listened to the first 7 podcasts. Very excited to be part of the team and the tour team. And Seymour, you guys have done just a great job of, rebranding the whole putter market. And I'm really a big fan. I've got one in the bag right now. And just so glad to be on the show. And hopefully we can give golfers all over the world some great information that they haven't been privy to before.
No question about it. And your credentials are pretty incredible. And you and I have known each other from the PGA Tour Radio Network. And we've been together in other places. We've been together out on tour. This year, we had a great time together hanging out for a day at Bay Hill. And I've just admired what you bring to the game. And I mean, today, there's not anywhere to be found a high-level golfer competing to win and to competing to be at their best that doesn't have somewhere somebody like yourself who they can talk to about the mental side of the game. Because I know we've always heard, well, hey, it's between the ears, it's a mental game, and you know, what percent is it mental? But I think it's got to be almost 100% mental, because if you can't get over the mental part of the game, then you won't even be able to get to that great physical part of the game that you've trained all your life for. So that's why we think it's so important, and it can be a lot of fun. So we're talking about every month diving into what exactly is sports psychology in the way that it applies to golf. And you're working from beginning golfers to the highest level tour players, golfers at all ages, golfers that have just gotten into the game versus golfers that have been around for a long, long time. But I think today it's going to be a lot of fun just to talk a little bit about, Doctor, how did you get to where you are today as one of the most renowned sports psychologists in the entire world? And I do, you know, I'm saying that you've written books, you're constantly a go-to guy throughout the world. And, you know, right now I know you've been hanging your hat down at the David Ledbetter Academy as the director of sports psychology, but how did you get here?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been a long and fruitful road, but it's also been a tough, arduous journey. And everybody that I talk with says, boy, I wish I had your job. Boy, I would love to have your job. And I'm sitting here going, I don't know if you really, really know what I had to go through to actually get my degree and get my certification. But it all started a long, long time ago. And I'm going to talk about this story. And I talk about it in a new book that I have coming out called The 10 Mental Keys for Great Putting, what you already know and what you need to learn again. But I was very, very small, Ted and Jim, when I came out of high school. I was like 4'10" and 86 pounds. I looked like I was about a sixth or seventh grader when I was 18 years old. And I happened to go to the Arnold Palmer Golf Academy. And while I was there, the very first day I drove there from Indiana, where I grew up, all the way to Stratton Mountain, Vermont. And it was the first 3-week summer golf school that Arnold put his name to. It was the Arnold Palmer Golf Academy at Stratton Mountain, Vermont. So far ahead of its time. And the very first day I drove all by myself, 2-day trip from Indiana to Vermont. I locked my keys inside my trunk. And this is before the days of FedEx and UPS, overnight delivery. I had to go through the snail mail and have my parents send an extra set of keys back. I had a Ball State University t-shirt where I was going to go that following fall. I had jeans on. I had to borrow clubs from some different golfers, from Bodie Marks, who was the Yale University golf captain who was on the staff there, borrowed a set of shoes. And on the very first day, on a 215-yard par 3, I stepped up with a borrowed driver with a Titleist 3 golf ball and actually made a hole-in-1. And made a hole in one. So, I mean, and that was the big advertising ploy for the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, that, you know, Arnold Palmer Golf Academy said, look how much that we're teaching these kids.
Make it hole in one.
Yeah, the very first day, you know, little Bobby Winters from Galveston, Indiana, gets a hole in one with a borrowed driver, for God's sake, you know. So Arnold, you know, heard this, and I was fortunate enough to go on and win, you know, my division of the boys championship in match play. And as we're sitting around, and Arnold came up and visited, you know, with about 120 young boys at that time. And Mr. Palmer was sitting around. He was asking us what we were going to do after we got out of high school. And I said, well, I'm going to go to Ball State University, which is in Muncie, Indiana. And he said, are you going to play golf for them? And I said, boy, I don't know. I don't have any scholarships. You know, I don't know the coach. And he goes, well, listen, Bob, he goes, anybody that makes a hole in one with a driver and actually wins this championship is good enough to probably, you know, make a stand or at least try to walk onto the golf team. Don't you think? And I said, yes, sir, Mr. Palmer. He goes, I want you to go the very first day, and I want you to go into that golf office and tell the coach you want to play for the team. And so that very first day, now you have to understand, I was about 4'11" and about 92 pounds September 1st came around. And I walked into the office, and it was Coach Earl Yestingsmeyer. And God bless his soul, I talked to his secretary, told him I wanted to see the coach and see if I could get on the team. And he comes out, he says, well, hi. He goes, I'm Coach Yestingsmeyer. And I said, I'm Bob Winters. And I said, I come from Walton, Indiana. And I said, I'd like to play here for the Ball State University Cardinals. And the Ball State Cardinals have always been a very, very strong golf team. And we had, you know, several All-Americans on the team. So a little bit of confidence and a lot of ignorance allowed me to actually step into his office that day. So he asked me, he says, well, what year are you in school? And I go, I'm a freshman. And he goes, well, I can't do anything for you right now, Bobby. He goes, maybe in 3 or 4 years. And I go, 3 or 4 years, I'll be done. He goes, yeah, you'll be done. And maybe then we can see how you progressed in high school. I said, Coach, I'm a freshman. He goes, yeah, in high school, right? And I go, no, in college. He goes, where? And I go, here at Ball State. And he goes, oh, my God, I thought you were about 12 or 13 years old. So the point of the story is I walked in because Arnold Palmer told me to actually, you know, take a risk, flex my risk muscle. I went in. I guarantee if you weren't confident going in, you sure as heck weren't confident coming out, all right? But Coach Yestingsmeyer gave me a chance. I qualified third that year on the team, and I had a really great short game. And again, we always talk about, like Mark Twain said, he goes, success comes from confidence and ignorance. I didn't even know enough to be scared or fear of failure. All I knew is that Arnold Palmer told me to go play, and I actually worked my way onto the team, which led me to the story of being with probably the world's best putter, who his name was Mike Hacker. You know, isn't that a great name for a golfer?
It is a good name.
Michael Ray Hacker.
He figured he better become a great putter with that.
Yes. Michael Ray Hacker was a great player out of Indianapolis, Indiana, had won the Doral Publix World Junior when he was 16, won the Indianapolis Open. He won so many different things. And he was the best putter I had seen. He had himself one of those little Ping My Echo putters. I mean, it was the old Pings. It was kind of looked like a little race car. And he never really took any lessons from anyone. His father was his only coach. But one day, and it was my second year on the team, and I was a red shirt that year, he looked at me and he goes, Bobby, take a look at my stroke. He goes, I'm not making anything. And so I finally looked at him and I go, Michael, I said, your stroke looks really good. He goes, I just don't think so. And he started working on his mechanics and all this. And I said, I'm going to go in and talk to Mr. Padgett. Now, we're talking about Don Padgett here, who was the head pro at Green Hills Country Club. And he was then the secretary treasurer of the National PGA. And his son, Don Padgett Jr., went on to play on the PGA Tour. And Don was a great, great teacher. So I went into his office, knocked on the door, and he goes, who is it? I said, Padge. I said, it's Bobby Winters. And he goes, what do you want? And I said, Michael Hacker out here is having a problem with his putting. We're getting ready to go on a big, important golf tournament, and I need you to take a look at him. And so he had all of this yellow legal paper. We didn't have the QuickBooks or the Tax Turbo, and he was taking care of about 25,000 PGA professionals at that time. So he says, okay, I'll go and take a look at Mr. Hacker. So he goes out on the putting green, and he says, Michael, your friend Winters here tells me you're having problems putting. What's going on? And Michael said, Mr. Padgett, he goes, I just haven't made anything. Now, Jim and Ted, and for all of our listeners, when this kid, Michael Hacker, tells you that he's having a problem and he's not making putts, I mean, this kid can make 20-footers, 50-footers, 70-footers. He makes everything with regularity.
Yeah.
But he wasn't making anything this day. So Padge, just like Harvey Pinnick and all the other great coaches, looks at him and says, well, just go putt a few, Michael, and tell me what's going on. So Michael was talking about he wanted to get the ball started on the right line. He wanted to sort of hit it solid. And Padge, after about five or six putts, he goes, well, Michael, he goes, you tell me all these technical things. He goes, but I haven't heard you say one thing. And Michael says, what's that? He goes, you haven't talked about anything about the ball rolling in the hole. You see it going into the hole. You're feeling it going into the hole. You haven't told me anything about that. And he says, well, here's what I want you to do. This next time, don't be thinking anything super technical. Just step up there, see where you want to roll into the hole, and just hit that putt solid. So he steps up there, you know, 15-footer, boom, knocks it right in the hole. Well, let me see how you do that again. He does this two more times. Padge looks at me and gives me a sly wink. He goes, now, isn't that a lot better, Michael? And Michael goes, wow. He goes, that really is, you know, Mr. Padgett. He goes, that's great. He goes, well, continue to do that, Michael. And he walks away. And so I'm sitting there sort of dumbfounded. And I'm saying to myself, hold on here. I'm a really good golf student. Padge didn't tell him anything I hadn't already told him. So I run myself back into his office, knock on the door. He goes, who is it? I go, Padge, it's Bobby Winters. He goes, what do you want? And I said, I need to talk to you. He says, Winters, come in here and have a seat. And I said, Mr. Padgett, I said, I don't understand what went on out there. I said, you know, you told him the very same things I told him. What, you know, what's the difference? And he sat me down. He says, Bobby, I want you to hear me once and never forget this. He goes, now, you know, and I know that I didn't give Michael anything he didn't already possess. Right? And I said, yes, sir. He goes, and you know that you told him some good stuff, and I know I told him some good stuff, right? And I said, yes, sir. He goes, but Michael, he's hurting. He was looking for something. So I gave him something that he could hang his hat on, and he could actually have some fun with, and he could actually believe in. And so he started making putts. I said, sort of like Dumbo with the crow's feather. He goes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then he looked at me, and he said, Winners. He goes, here's something really important. And he's actually, you know, takes his hands like he's holding a putter. He goes, golf is not so much about this as it is. And he starts tapping to his head, as it is about this. He goes, never, ever forget that. And I said, Mr. Padgett, I won't. And just that next morning, I went down to the student center and I changed my major into physical education and educational psychology back in the early 70s. And since that time, I've been involved with sports vision, neuropsychology, hypnotherapy. And then as the years moved on, I found myself associated with a great sports vision optometrist by the name of Dr. Herbert Price, who introduced me to people like Dr. Bill Lee and Dr. Bill Harrison and Dr. Craig Farnsworth. And I started in the early, late 70s, early 80s, starting to find out everything about the dominant eye, about how your eyes work, about the visual system, how it affects putting. And then in the early 80s, I took it out on tour. And my first real success story was back in 1985 at the TPC at the Players Championship. It was with a young German I went up to. I was talking to Joe Inman, and I was also talking to Alan Miller, but I introduced myself to Bernhard Langer. And Bernhard Langer, at that time, was just this German player that no one knew. And so the point being is, I actually did some things with Bernhard, showing him how his visual system worked. And he went on to shoot that 29 on the, I think the back side was his front side, but he was assessed a 2-shot penalty for slow play. But a couple of weeks later, he wins the 85 Masters Championship and doesn't have a 3-putt green. Now, that came from Sports Vision. And as the years went on, I, you know, was introduced to a wonderful person by the name of Dr. Bob Rotella, and I'd seen his work. I'm sitting there going, I'm doing the same stuff this guy's doing, except I don't have my PhD. And so I actually went up to Bob, and he had Dr. Linda Bunker and just a wealth of great intelligentsia at the University of Virginia. I sort of worked and crawled my way into there and got my PhD, and it was unbelievable. Unbelievable, you know, all the great stuff that we did, all the putting research, talking about vision, putting, confidence. And then after that, I came down to Florida, and David Ledbetter asked me, would you like to join me here at our world teaching headquarters at Champions Gate? And I said, absolutely. But for the last 35, 40 years, I have worked with so many thousands of people now, trying to get them to perform better, to think better, and to putt better. And I got to tell you, where your mind goes, that's really where your golf game goes. If you're thinking great stuff, you'll have great stuff. But, I mean, that's sort of my life right there in a nutshell. It's just been an unbelievable journey of research, of science, but also a practical applied experience. And I'm one of these applied scientists. I'm always saying, if I can't walk the walk, I certainly shouldn't talk the talk. So I have played at every level, and I'm kind of a hybrid out here because I come from a motor learning, sports psychology, sports vision, and performance and coaching background. And my credentials, I'm very proud of all the work I've done. And so when I talk with an athlete, we just aren't talking psychobabble or you just got to be positive. I'm talking about very specific things, about seeing monochromatic colors in greens or understanding how your dominant eye works in setting up to a putt. Also, being able to visualize the putt and also how to actually put the wheels back on when you're not making anything and you can't fall out of the boat and even hit the water. So, I've worked with the very best of the best and some of the most emotionally challenged golfers in the world. So I know I've been kind of going on a diatribe here, but
that's kind of really what
I've done. So when people meet me and talk with me, they go, I just didn't realize you did all of these different things, that you've done all this different body of work. And for me, people always ask me, like, who, is your most famous client? It isn't about fame and celebrityism. It isn't about having all the star-powered people in the world, because I've got players who have won every major championship in my historical file, if you will. But the most important person for me is the person that wants to learn, that wants to get better, and they become my most valuable, my most important student. Because if I can help them, I mean, they go and they tell everyone else. My father, who had a wonderful construction company, only made 100 business cards. And at the bottom of that business card, he had two little guys with great big hands and great big smiles looking at each other. And the little title, the little caption underneath those pictures, it said, "Satisfied customers are our best ads." And that's something that I've tried to live by every day, because I've always gone by the philosophy that you are only as good as your last pizza. And that's kind of been my philosophy.
We love it. I mean, our introductory episode may end up going into two episodes, because this is unbelievable stuff. And I mean, we can talk all day long about golf performance and putting performance and wow, do we want to do that? But when it comes down to it, in the end of the day, the joy of this game is only going to be retained if somebody understands that just how tough golf is and why it's so tough and why, you talked earlier about the confidence and the ignorance. And it seems like so many of these young golfers, right out of the gate have this unbelievable blend of confidence and ignorance. And it seems like eventually with experiences and negative experiences for many, it becomes fear and self-loathing, with knowledge added in and scar tissue and overthinking. And, as you talked about, in the end of the day, the geniuses, the guys like yourself at the top of this world, are able to then go back and help somebody distill the complex right back into the simple. And
well,
something like that, at least. Is that, am I off base there? Or is
no,
that,
no, you know? You're not off base at all. And I got to tell you, I want to cap off this story almost where I began. And, you know, back in about 2007, it just seems like it was yesterday. But it was just the day after Arnold Palmer had teed off the inaugural shot for the Masters with Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus. So I'm playing with him in his shootout. I'm playing with him and his good friend Ron Jackson and Dick Ferris. We're playing with Joe Patterson from Bel Air Country Club. So we're playing with Arnold. Arnold's our pro. And, you know, Arnold had seen me a lot. And, you know, I, you know, go back up and introduce myself. He goes, yeah, hey, Bob. Oh, yeah. He goes, I recognize you. I recognize your hair. You know, it's always, it's always about, you know, the hair. You know, so, yeah, I recognize you. So all of a sudden, Arnold comes over to me. And he's not jovial now. He looks up to me and he kind of comes to me. He goes, are you ready to play? And I go, yes. He goes, well, you better, because I damn well want to win this thing. I mean, he was like the general talking to a buck private, giving him his marching orders. And I tell you what, I kind of puckered up just a little bit because he was dead serious. And we went on to play Bay Hill. Now, we're doing really well. And I'm like on the 11th hole. And I think I'm one or two under now. And I've been playing really well. And sometimes, you know, when you play with, you know, your idol, your king, your hero, it just elevates you to a whole new level. And it was just one of the greatest days of my life. And so I'm playing with Arnold because he wants to play with me. And I, you know, had hit some balls with him before and, you know, talked, you know, quite a bit. But he comes up to me, he goes, Bob, he goes, what are you doing? And I go, what do you mean what I'm doing? He goes, you're making a lot of putts. And I said, well, I'm just doing what you told me when I was 17 years old. And he kind of looked at me, he kind of sticks out that lower lip. He goes, what'd I tell you? And I said, you told me that, you know, every putt you step into, you step in there, you really see where you want that ball to go. You keep your head steady and you hit the putt solid like you want to make it. And all of a sudden, Arnold looks at me and he kind of looks down, looks away, comes back to me. He goes, I said that? And I go, yes. And he finally looks at me. He goes, and he kind of had that little sheepish grin. He goes, maybe I better start doing that. And I go, well, yes, Arnold, this would be a good time. We've only got about 6 or 7 holes left. And on my mother and father's grave, I swear, Arnold made 4 20-footers and a 10-footer on the last hole. I tell you, I have never seen anyone. He was happier than a puppy dog with 2 tails. He was just had this huge grin. And after he made this 10-footer, and I think he made this 10-footer, there must have been a side bet with him and Dick Ferris or Ron Jackson or whatever. He gave it a huge fist pump, and he comes up, and he was like 75 years old or whatever at that time, but he grabbed me like a blacksmith with those big hands, and he shook me, and he goes, I'll tell you what, they can tell you anything they want about hitting a 300-yard drive. He goes, but there's nothing like making a winning putt. Wow. And he was just had a smile on his face, guys, from ear to ear. And I got to tell you, what Arnold told me back when I was 17 years old is still sage putting advice today. And you'll get it from any putting guru. But, you know, keeping your head and your body still. But most importantly, hitting the putt solid and actually believing long before you step in that you're going to make that thing. I mean, those are words of prophecy, that those are the golden keys to great putting. And I'll tell you what, to have it told to me, you know, initially from 17, and to give back my hero the lesson he gave me, really, it came full circle for me. And that's when I really knew that I kind of arrived here in the world of golf.
That's incredible. And I mean, all of us that are listening to this, I can't wait that this is going to be a regular feature that we're going to have every month with Dr. Bob Winters. And it's just so much fun to talk about this part of the game because it really strikes a chord with all of us. And, you know, we sometimes talk about the physical and we talk about, you know, what we think we need to correct and what have you. But in the end of the day, you know, it's the infuriating or it's the joy of making putts, of having that belief and every once in a while, visualizing something good and then actually seeing it happen. And isn't that those are the best moments in golf? And that's really what we're going to be talking about. There's so many different directions we are going to go. I need to go back even before, you know, we just heard that as a 17-year-old with no promise of a college scholarship or college golf in front of you, on your own, you got in a car and you drove to go to an Arnold Palmer Golf Academy. I mean, what confidence, what independence that showed. I mean, how did that come about? I mean, at that stage, okay, obviously you were an accomplished high school golfer. But it almost sounds like your end game was just to go be with greatness and enjoy the experience if you really weren't focused on a college scholarship at that point. I mean, why did you go to this camp?
Well, it was really sort of a gift from my mother and father. They knew how hard I worked. They knew how far I'd come in a couple of years. I didn't start playing the game really seriously until I was 14. We didn't come from a golf family. Sure. I mean, okay. I grew up in a public golf course. In fact, I did just like everybody else. I cut down a little section of grass. I burned off the grass. I stuck a tuna can in the ground. I stuck like an old proximity marker for my flag. And I actually hit pitch balls. I just, you know, pitch shots all day. I was known back in high school and college as Winners the Wedge, but I also knew the power of a great short game. You've got to wedge it close and you got to make putts, because everybody was out driving me 50, 60, 70 yards. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, how small I was. I mean, people said, I've got to play against this little shrimp. Okay, go ahead and hit it. And there'd be people on the green. They say, go ahead and hit. You're not going to hit the green anyway. So I actually became very good from 30, 40, 50 yards and in. So by virtue of being short and being small, I developed a big time short game. And I really developed sort of this psyche is that, okay, you know, there's a lot of different ways to skin a cat here. You don't have to hit it big. You don't have to, you know, hit it, you know, super close. But you do have to be really good at accuracy, at recovery, and getting the ball in the hole as fast as you can, because that is the name of the game. The name of the game is saving strokes, not wasting strokes. And it seems to me that so many people just sort of give away strokes around the green. And more importantly, they give away vital strokes on the green because they don't have a good strategy. They don't have a good game plan, or they just don't even have a good core belief in their putting ability. And that's really, you know, what my whole philosophy about great putting is all about. Developing this core foundation for saying, this is what I want to do. This is how I do it. Now let's go do it. And let's have a blast seeing how great we can become.
Well, that's phenomenal. Well, we are speaking with Dr. Bob Winters, who is a great friend of Seymour, and moving forward is going to be our sports psychologist. And, you know, Dr., you and I talked, you know, many, many months ago, we become friends. And interestingly enough, both you and Dr. Rotella before you had always kind of had a soft spot for Seymour and some of our technology. We'll get into that in the future. And that'll just be a small part of what we'll talk about. But the fact that there is something about the Seymour putter that ties back into the mental side of the game. And we'll get into all of that. We'll get into more of your, I mean, even just establishing the credentials, the books you've written, the articles you've published, and more and more of that. And then we'll get down to real practical application. And we've got listeners out there that are teaching instructors. They're going to want to know how to get more involved with you, maybe someday become even certified by you on all things on the mental side of the game. And we've got golfers that are all ages, all levels. You've been with all those types of golfers. In fact, right now, to bring this discussion full circle at the end, I find it really, really kind of cool that you yourself are now running your own 3-week junior golf camps. And we started this story talking about you attending a 3-week junior golf camp, and here you are running a 3-week junior golf camp right now. So that's kind of cool. Tell us a little bit about kind of what your goals are when you now put together one of these camps.
Well, I've been with Nike Golf and U.S. Sports Camps, which is the world's largest camp organizer. They're out of San Rafael, California. And I started back with them. I'm really sort of one of the charter members. I started when I was on the coaching staff at the University of Virginia, and we actually started the Nike Golf Schools there. We had four of them across the nation. We have about 115 across the nation now. and I have come up here to New England, to the Berkshire Mountains, to a place called Williams College. And this is my 26th year doing this, fellas. I have four consecutive one-week junior golf schools. It has become one of the very popular and premier golf schools in the nation because we do things different here. We talk about golf skills, life skills, talk about building confidence, composure, concentration, emotional stability, about really playing the game. So we are taking this now at a grassroots level, and I'm so happy that you guys at Seymour has been such a great sponsor and provider of some great equipment for some of these kids for prizes. And I'll tell you what, and that's the whole point about having a Seymour putter. If you haven't put a Seymour putter in your hands, then you don't really, you haven't really created an edge as far as aiming confidence, overall putting performance confidence, because people who try a Seymour putt with the Seymour. And so we're actually sort of, introducing a lot of these young golfers, just not to Seymour putters, but to the fundamentals of great putting, both yep. mental, physical, emotional. But as long as they get good technical instruction, get good instruments, get good equipment, it's amazing what these young players, are doing. But what I'm doing up here at these Nike golf schools, we also do it at, with David Ledbetter at the Ledbetter Golf Academies. I've been with David now for 20 years, and that's been a tremendous marriage. And it's funny, we go back again to Arnold Palmer, because Arnold actually took my grip when I was 17, and he put my hands on the club, and he said, "Bob, you need to have your hands on this club like this, and don't let anybody change it." And the first time I played golf with David back in about 1999, 2000, when he was sort of interviewing me and wanted to see, really how my golf game was, he looked at me in his very beautiful English South African accent. He goes, "Bob," he goes, "hey, your grip, who taught you your grip?" And I looked at David and I said, "Arnold Palmer." And he looked at me and he goes, "Really?" And I go, "Yeah, what do you think?" And David looked at me, he goes, "Well, it looks pretty good." So David wasn't going to go against Arnold. All right? So the funny thing is, and let me say something great about David Ledbetter. I mean, he's been a great colleague, wonderful friend, has a great wit. I was on the first tee with him, and he was asking me that, and I actually backed off. And he goes, "What's wrong?" And I go, "I just had a little mosquito in my ear." But the thought I had was, here was David Ledbetter, and he was asking me, about my grip. I'm sitting here thinking he's dissecting me. And we've all had sort of those judgments. This person's looking at me. They're evaluating me. What will they think of me? And so I had to back off. I said, "I'm not chipped beef. I can do this." And I stepped back in there, and, I hit it, right down the fairway, hit it really nice and solid. And so we planned for about four or five holes. And David, if people don't know, this was a great tour player over in the European, South African tours. But he looked at me and he goes, "Wow," he goes, "we're having a great day." And I said, "Yes, David." I said, "Let me tell you something. I'm going to give you a little personal disclosure. On that first tee, I didn't back off because I had a mosquito in my ear. I was worried about what you were thinking about me." And he looked at me and he started laughing. He goes, "Well, Bob, I'm going to tell you something. When I was on the first tee, I was thinking the same thing about you thinking about me."
It's universal.
It's universal. So I don't care who you are. You could be the number one sports psychologist, the number one golf instructor in the world, whoever you are. We're all human beings. We all have these frailties. We all have these limitations. We all have these self-doubts. And no one is immune to the negative thinking, negative thoughts, negative feelings. And that's really what I'm going to hopefully, bring here to the putting couch, where we can bring some immediate help and put people on the couch so they can get back up off the couch onto the golf course and play unbelievably great golf.
Incredible. It's been such a joy, and we've been with Dr. Bob Winters. And until we do it again in about 4 weeks, you've been listening to The Putting Couch, presented by the Seymour Putter Company's tour team. And we will talk again real soon, Bob. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Dr. Bob.
You're more than welcome. Great to be on the show.
We appreciate you joining us. If you haven't subscribed to the show, make sure you do wherever you're listening. Be sure to leave a rating and review, because that's how we get the Putting Couch podcast content in front of more people. Also, take a screenshot and share it on social media and tag us at Seymour Putters or hashtag Team Seymour.